Houston, Chris on 2 for Hypervisor 1.
With you.
Yeah, well, a few of us noticed during DPC that our Optimuses were acting up, and we realized it was because we lost connection to CloudNet, and we went on Pingmaster and saw that Hypervisor 1 seems to be failed. Same with DHCP-02 and AD-02, which I think all reside on there, and just wanted to check about, taking a look at that or power cycling it, and I can do that, at least take a look at the screen in a minute or two. We just wanted to let you guys know.
Thanks for the report. Yeah, we'll take a report on what the screen on Hypervisor 1 says.
Hoppy, I'll get that to you in just a minute. Houston, Chris on 2 for Hypervisor 1.
Houston's here.
I'm taking a look at Hypervisor 1, and it appears to be off OFF as best I can tell. It looks like the power chain is intact. It looks like the cobalt brick is switched on, but the light on the cobalt brick is off. So I'm going to trace the power chain and try to figure out why there is no power going to the cobalt brick. But my assumption is that the power drained on Hypervisor 1 and it turned off, but unclear why. So I will trace that and get back to you in a second.
Good plan, Chris. Thanks for sleuthing.
Houston, Chris, on to one more update from that. So it's a really interesting signature. So the cobalt bricks for Hypervisor 1 and Hypervisor 2 both come out of a cable that splits like 1 into 3. And if I look at those two cobalt bricks, they both have their switches in the on position, but I have a green light on the Hypervisor 2 brick and no green light on the Hypervisor 1 brick. So the circuit breakers are not popped. I was going to try to power cycle the Hypervisor 1 brick, if you're okay with that, to see if it comes back.
You are go to power cycle the cobalt brick to Hypervisor 1.
Houston, Chris on 2 for Hypervisor troubleshooting.
Go ahead.
Yeah, so power cycling the cobalt brick 1314 for Hypervisor 1, when you power it off, leave it off for a little bit while, and power it back on, you get a very intermittent green LED on the output power that flashes on, but then immediately goes off. Also tried cycling the output circuit breaker just to see if that might be what's causing it, but no issues. Everything seems nominal. I was thinking there is an unused cobalt brick 1429 that comes off the same 120-volt line. What do you guys think about moving the Hypervisor 1 power chain to that cobalt brick and seeing if that resolves the issue?
Checking. Station Houston on 2 for Chris and Hypervisor.
Chris 2.
Chris, we agree with your recommendation to move the Hypervisor 1 power chain to unused cobalt brick 1429. Before making any changes in connections, we would like you to put in some safing. So on the PS120 junction box, please unpower the J3 switch before making any changes to connections, and then once complete, you can repower that J3 switch.
Okay, copy. And unpowering that J3 switch will also power down the cobalt brick for Hypervisor 2. Is that, presumably the battery will last for that short time period, but just wanted to double check that with you as well.
Excellent note, Chris, and we are okay with that brief loss of power to Hypervisor 2.
Copy that. And I'm just going to reconfigure the upstream. The 1429 is already plugged into that 120 volt, so I'm just going to move the 28 volt side of the connector, but I'll still do that upstream power down.
Okay, yep, we're just being extra sure we're extra safe, but good plan.
Houston, Chris on 2 for Hypervisors. So, The plot thickens. It looks like the issue persists on the other cobalt brick 1429. So, when I turn on 1429, the green light pops on and then almost immediately pops off. So that's making me now think that it's something about the upstream power supply brick. So I'm going to go take a closer look at that.
We copy, Chris. Good plan.
Houston, Chris on 2. everything looks nominal with the brick. I can't see anything off nominal with it. I would say if I were on the ground, probably my next troubleshooting step would be to unplug the brick from Hypervisor 1 and see if, like, without the downstream load of the computer plugged into it, if I would get the same signature or not. Is that something that you guys feel comfortable with me doing up here?
Troubleshooting in the morning is fun, Chris. We were actually thinking maybe the next step might be to try a different power supply that goes between the cobalt brick and the hypervisor itself. And we were wondering if you might be aware of a spare one that could be available, such as powers an SSC.
Yeah, so these are the G9 hypervisors, so we don't have any SSC like that, and it's a different power supply for the G9 hypervisors versus our normal SSCs. I know there's a bag in PMM that has some spare ones. Also, a really quick check would be if you guys are okay with it, is I can just temporarily for a minute borrow the cable from Hypervisor 2 and see if that fixes the issue, and that'll at least tell us if we're on the right track or not.
Good thinking, Chris. Yes, we're good with your plan to borrow the cable from Hypervisor 2 temporarily and see if that works.
Copy that. I'll switch off the cobalt brick for Hypervisor 2 and swap that cable over to Hypervisor 1 and see if the issue persists or if it, or what happens.
We're looking forward to hearing. It's a fun saga to follow.
Houston, Chris on 2. So this actually appears to be an issue with the Hypervisor computer itself. I swapped the power chains between Hypervisor 2 and Hypervisor 1. And now the Hypervisor 1 power chain works, and the Hypervisor 2 power chain does not. So it seems to be, and what I mean by that is what the original power chain that went to Hypervisor 1 that's now going to Hypervisor 2 is working with a solid green light, and Hypervisor 2 is remaining powered, but Hypervisor 1 is not powered, even though it was on the power chain that was a minute ago working for Hypervisor 2. So I think something about the shell is causing something to trip off in the cobalt brick.
Okay, copy. Thanks for that report.
And just to fully close the loop on our configuration, I'm going to switch off the cobalt bricks again and re-switch the power chains back to their original state. But I think, yeah, we have a shell issue with Hypervisor 1 is my suspicion.
Okay, excellent work troubleshooting, Chris. Understand all. We are going to work a forward plan. We've actually got Pluto on the phone here with Flight. If you need any help with ops products or timeline execution stuff, let us know and we'll help as best we can from the ground and agree with your plan to put things back the way they were originally.
Copy all, yeah. It'll be a rough morning just because ops products will be completely down for us up here. So I think we may need some help, and if there's anything I can do preemptively, I know we have like a backup Hypervisor 1 and PMM, that sort of thing. If there's anything I can kind of do preemptively to like get ready for what our next steps might be, I'm happy to take those, those preparatory steps if you have them as soon as you get them.
Copy. We'll get you some prep steps as soon as we can.
Houston, Chris on 2. Just to completely close the loop, I've restored the power chains back to their original configuration. Hypervisor 2 is being powered off Cobalt Brick 1423. That all seems like it has a good power chain, good lights verified. Hypervisor 1, I've re-plugged in the power chain to the original brick of 1314, and that is still no joy on passing power to the, or having a good green light of power on the hypervisor.
Okay, Chris, thanks for the report on the config. We would like you to turn off the cobalt brick 1314 for Hypervisor 1.
Yep, that's affirmed. That's the state it is in. That brick is turned OFF off. I tried turning it on after doing the reconfiguration, got the same signature, and now have left it off.
Okay, Chris, that's a good config. And just an FYI, swapping drives and shells for G9s is not super straightforward, so it may be a while till we have a plan for the hypervisor one replacement.
Okay, copy it. I mean, I do remember from training doing the drive swap on the G9 hypervisor. So happy to do that if that's the plan. Just let us know what you guys would like.
Houston copies.
And just to put it super plainly, I definitely know it's more complicated on these guys, but it's something I also feel super comfortable to do pretty quickly.
Copy, Chris. And yeah, our understanding is that the hardware swap is not difficult. It's just that the G9s with a different hard drive and software makes them a little bit cranky, so there might be some extra steps that need to be done to get the software working right.
Okay, yeah, copy. Yeah, I know we have to, there's a little M2 SSDs that we have to move around, but yeah, there's extra software steps. Totally understand that might be a little bit finicky to get back up. We're ready to support whatever you guys need.
Copy, Kristen. As soon as we've got a plan, we'll get it to you. It's our top priority to try to get Hypervisor 1 back.
Copy all. Thank you. Thank you guys for working it.
Station Houston 2 for Hypervisor 1 impacts.
Chris on 2 for HV1 impacts.
All right, 90 seconds to an LOS. You've probably already thought of this, but for you and the rest of the crew, for Optimus, we recommend not closing or refreshing it. Backup IPV is available to you for procedures, and we aren't sure about your ability to access messages.
Yeah, copy all. I'll give a double check on the messages, but yeah, anything that's open has seemed to work, and as long as our computers, the biggest challenge for us is the tablets. If they lose their Wi-Fi connection, they can't regain it. We're working off of SSCs right now, and that seems to be going okay, and we'll switch to IP backup if we need to. Thank you.
Sounds great, and we'll see you on the other side of a 18-minute LOS.
Copy all, and at least on the SSC in front of me, I do seem to be able to access messages. So, I think we'll be able to, it'll be an efficiency hit, but we'll be able to get by, and we'll talk to you on the other side of the LOS.
Copy. Thanks, Chris. Station Houston on Space to Ground 2 for Chris and Hypervisor 1 replacement.
Chris on 2 for 1.
Chris, you've got a great memory. We were able to find that there is a preloaded Hypervisor 1 backup. It is in PMM. I've got a location and more stowage details when you're ready to copy.
Ready to copy. Pretty sure I remember because I think we just moved them from one spot to another a few days ago, but I'll take it.
Awesome. All right. So the preloaded Hypervisor 1 backup is in PMM Deck 2, Locker Delta 2, and it's serial number 1005. So once you've gathered that backup Hypervisor 1, you can replace the failed Hypervisor 1 with the gathered Hypervisor. Since the cobalt brick's already off, safing's in place, and then once you've done the replacement, you can power cobalt brick on, and hopefully we'll have some joy.
This will have some impact for folks. I'll go ahead and do that right now. It might make me a tiny bit late for my next activity, but I think that should be no overall impact to the day. I'll get that in place right now and let you know once it's booting up.
All sounds good, Chris.
Houston Station, good morning. Jack's on cue for cycle tank drain.
Good morning, Jack.
Good morning. The UPA is configured for cycle tank drain. You're go to proceed.
We copy.
Houston, Chris on to you for Hypervisor.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I've got Hypervisor ZBUF 1005, the HV1 spare, plugged in. It's the standard G9 thing of it needs to charge up a little bit and get some battery charge before it can actually power up off of the power adapter, so I'm going to let it charge up for a few minutes, but I now have all good indications on the power chains, green light that is staying on the cobalt brick, and charging light on the side of the Z-Book that is staying illuminated, so seems to confirm our suspicion that it was the shell that was the issue here, so I'm going to let this charge up for a few minutes and come back and give it a shock to power on again, and we'll let you know when I've done that.
Copy all, Chris, and that's very promising that the powertrain indications look nominal. Charging up the G9 can take up to an hour, but hopefully it'll be a faster charge than that.
Yeah, I think in the past, giving it about 15 minutes is usually enough, has been enough to let it start to boot. But so I'll go do a couple of your tasks and then check on it in a little bit. And just for our SA, is there any reconfiguration your guys are going to need to do on the spare, or is it or should we expect things to come back pretty quick? I know when we did this swap out of the HV4 shell, we had some issues with it showing like an old version of Ops products and that sort of thing.
Good question, Chris. So we've got Pluto in a car driving here, and they're probably going to arrive right about the time, hopefully, that the laptop will be done charging, so they'll be able to take a look at it and determine if any additional configuration is needed.
Copy all, and super appreciate Pluto. I feel bad to bring Pluto in the middle of the night, but really appreciate them coming in to get us sorted. And then in the interim, I'm going to tempsto the old G9 Hypervisor 1 server on Lab Deck 2. But at some point, no rush on this. We'll look for a final location to put the failed shell.
Thanks for the tempsto location. We'll get you a final location later today. And I think this is totally a justified reason to bring Pluto in, and luckily past Pluto helped out future Pluto by having a loaded hypervisor one to start with. So all is well. We're getting better.
Yeah, absolutely. That seems, especially with the sort of trickier shell swaps for these guys, it seems like having a hot spare ready to go for these sort of critical infrastructure pieces is a fantastic idea.
Concur.
Scuba, Chris on 3 for a field of view check in step 1.5 of 2.011. Copy, continuing in step 2 of 2.011. Thank you. Then Chris on 2. HV1 is the spare is powered back up now and is go for ops.
Copy all, Chris, and your timing is awesome because our Pluto has arrived, and so he will take a look-see and verify good health and status with Hypervisor 1.
Fantastic, and thank you so much, Pluto, for coming in and helping us get this all sorted out. This will really be a huge help for us to have this up and running, so really appreciate coming in for it.
He's happy to be here. He's smiling and giving a thumbs up. Station Houston on Space Ground 2 for recycle tank fill and timeline flexibility options.
Houston, Chris on 2. We copied that message for the recycle tank. Jack is deep behind a rack, but I'll check in with him. I think he's the one on that. I'll check in with him and Anil and have him get back to you.
Hey, Chris. Yeah, no problem. We were going to offer that if Jack and Anil want to start the recycle tank early, they can, but certainly no rush either.
Yeah, I'll pass the message along and let them know. Thank you. Houston Station, Jack on 2.
Hey, Jack. Hopefully I didn't interrupt your workflow, but I wanted to offer to you and Anil, if you want to, you can get into the recycle tank fill early. But you can also perform it on time, specifically in step 3.1.2, our drain commanding is complete.
Copy, 3.1.2, your drain commanding is complete, so we're going that step. I'll hop down to Neil and see if that makes sense. I've also got a stowage question for you, if you're ready.
We're ready.
For the semi.
Standing
by. For the PMM aft stowage in step 1 of that stow check. I have stowed the half CTB in PMM 1 deck 1 aft. There's still space for another half CTB back there. If you guys think you might find one for me to put in, I might leave it rotated for a few minutes while I do the recycle tank drain and then stuff it in rather than rotate it back down and then get back in there later. Any chance you guys think you have another half CTB for back there?
Checking on that, Jack, and just help us understand, is there not enough room for a 1.0 CTB back there?
There might be. It's a Tetris problem. There's definitely space for two half CTBs. I could probably pull out the half CTB that could have stepped to stow there, and then in its place put a 1.0 if the Tetris works out, but I'd have to play around with that a little bit.
Okay, copy, Jack. ISO is here, so while you're doing the regen activity, we can look for a half CTB, and hopefully we'll have the information for you when you're ready for it.
Houston, station Jackson 2 for step 3.12, return to tank drain.
And Jack, in 3.1.2, drain committee is complete. You're good to continue.
Copy, thanks. We're verifying the recycle tank quantity indicators at empty, and as is kind of standard for this tank, the ball bearing there is not quite at the empty. It's between the T and the Y. I just want to make sure you guys continue to be happy with that before we proceed.
Thanks for checking. Good config. Go to continue.
Go to continue. Stand station Jackson 2, recycle tank drain, step 5.3.7.
With you.
Yeah, sorry about this, but when I put the bladder in earlier this morning, I got the plug, the cap for the brine supply line inside the kind of detrusor for the bladder. So I'd have to open the detrusor to get the cap for the supply line out of there. I just want to make sure you guys are happy with that before we proceed.
We need a minute to check, Jack.
Of course. Thanks for standing by.
Station Houston 2 for Jack.
Jack's with you on the deuce.
Jack, you are go to open the diffuser to retrieve the cap. Just want to let you know that BPA is powered, but that's still a safe config for you to take the action.
Okay, copy. We are going to put that to work.
Houston copies.
Houston, station on 2 for brine talk processor.
Good morning, Anil.
Hey, good to hear your voice. Got the All-Star team on. I just wanted to let you know that the drain is in fill. The red on red has been uncapped, and that is the UPA fill drain compressor port. And the opening up the processor, taking out the cap, and putting it on was all successful without any problems, so we're approved.
Okay, copy, Anil. And one last question. Is the brine supply line QD demated from the bladder QD?
Yes, it is demated.
Awesome. Good
Both sides are capped.
Awesome. Good configuration. Nice work, and it's really good to hear your voice, too. Station Houston on Space Ground 2 for Jack at your convenience for PMM apt fill answer.
Houston Station, Jack's on 2 for PMM apt start track.
With you, Jack. We have an answer to your question, but you might have another question, so we'll take your question first.
Inc., my next question depends on the answer to your first question, so I dare you to go first.
Dare accepted. All right, so we do have another half CTB that you could put behind PMM 1, Deck 1, aft when you're ready to copy.
Ready to copy.
Half CTB, OSU, insert warehouse 8. That's serial number 5347, and that's located in node 3, aft 2.
They have CTB 5347. It's some OSU inserts. It's at node 3, aft 2, and that can end up deck 1 aft of the PMM.
Good copy.
Okay. I have a comment and then a question. In step 2.03, I misread that. I grabbed the generic men's large suitcase, serial number 5319, and I put it in PMM deck 2 aft with the two generic women's suitcases. So in line 3 there, it asked me to report on any open volume in deck 2 aft. There's no remaining volume now, but I did put that extra 1.0 back there. That's in step 2.03. So that's my comment. My question is, are you guys happy for me to leave it there, or do you want me to move it to the overhead overhead 2 aft spot? And I'm hoping the answer is no, and then I'm also hoping in 2.02, that empty emergency 1.0, I think I can squeeze that and the extra half CTB into deck 1 aft. So all these items would end up in deck 1 aft, deck 2 aft, and I wouldn't end up rotating overhead 2 to get to the aft, if all that makes sense.
It does make sense. Jack, to answer your first question, we are fine with where you put the generic men's large suitcase, so no changes needed. And we are checking on the second question. And Jack, back with you on two, if you're with me.
I am.
Okay, so for the empty Emer 2.0 CTB, we are good with you putting that into deck one aft. However, we are interested in you still going into overhead two aft. We think there's about a 1.5 CTB room there, and so we want your assessment on the space, and if there is space, we can find some items for you to put in the overhead two aft location.
Okay, copy. I will put the 1.0 empty emergency CTV 5537 into PMM deck 2 aft, and then after that I'll get into overhead 2 aft to see how much space is left. And I guess I got one last question for you. What were you guys feeding the last crew that they needed 8 warehouses of off twos? That's a pretty crazy number.
My answer is beans. Flight's answer is the historical accumulation of OSU inserts.
Okay. Sounds reasonable.
I appreciate your assessment of reasonable answers. Station Houston on Space Ground 2 for Chris and Hypervisor 1 status at your convenience.
Chris on 2 for the Hypervisor.
Hey, Chris, good news. Hypervisor 1 is looking good so far, and you've probably noticed some functions are working now. We do have some additional cleanup to do, but you should see some operational improvements since a morning DPC.
Hey, that's fantastic news. Thank you so much for all of the work on getting that back up and running. And yeah, things seem to be working much better up here, so I think we're in good shape.
Excellent. And I do have a stowage location for the failed hypervisor when you're ready to copy.
You beat me to my next question, and I am ready to copy.
All right, so big picture, you're going to put the failed hypervisor back where you found the replacement hypervisor, so that's going to be PMM Deck 2 and the Delta 2 locker. We recommend it be labeled suspect, and it can be loose in the locker. We're kind of trying to maintain separation between the failed one and the good ones.
Copy. I will label it suspect, and I will just put it straight in the locker as opposed to in the CTB.
Okay, excellent. And while I have you, we did get your crew note from the toilet stall audit. We're running down your answer to the question number one about the water. But for question number two, yes, Yeteve 1483 should currently be in toilet stall. It's going to be used later this week.
That's perfect, and that is how we like it. Yeah, sounds good. Thank you very much. I'll consider that laptop stowed back in Delta 2. I'll do that right now.
Thanks, Chris.
Houston station on 2 for acoustic blanket inspection.
Good morning, Jessica.
Good morning, Amy. Nice to hear your voice. I just had a question about this activity. I know it's a different ground team today, so you guys might not be aware. So I'll try to just give everybody the big picture and just make sure everyone's on the same page. Basically, yesterday during the PMM end cone cleanup, I had an activity to take a CTB or an MO2 bag that had a bunch of acoustic blankets in it and to stow those acoustic blankets in the FGB. That location, the FGB, is pretty difficult to access. I actually had to really kind of go caving and squeeze my body in a pretty uncomfortable way. I actually think that that bigger crew members probably wouldn't be able to do it at all to reach this location. I assumed that we were putting things in there that we thought we wouldn't be accessing for a really long time because it's pretty inconvenient. There were 11 acoustic blankets stuffed in there, and in order to retrieve one specific one, you'll probably have to take out all 11 one at a time in kind of this slow process because you can't see the labels. So I was kind of surprised that today I have an activity to go back in there, remove 3 or 4 of them and inspect them and then put them back in the same place. So essentially that's undoing everything I did yesterday when, of course, it would have made a lot more sense if we needed to inspect them to do that when I was taking them out of their bags and putting them away the first time. My question is just, since the end result has me stowing them in the same location, whether or not they have the residue present. I'm wondering if this would be better served to just do when we think we're actually using them. I'm happy to do it now, but I just wanted everyone to kind of have that big picture.
Jessica, that's a very good big picture and definitely a valid concern. We're going to need a little bit of time to discuss it.
Okay, yeah, I guess the biggest question in my mind is if we, like, why do we care about this residue? Is it something that we consider to be, like, toxic or we, you know, make the blankets unusable? And if in that case, then I would recommend if we do see the residue that I remove those blankets and we do something else with them or trash them. Because otherwise, you know, if we're not going to use them anyway, then we'd just, they're taking up space and would have to throw them away later. In that case, it would be, you know, well worth time of just getting rid of them now. I didn't see any of this residue when I was stowing them, but of course I didn't do a complete inspection on each one because they were folded.
All valid questions, Jessica. So, yeah, we are fine if you want to defer the CQ blanket inspection so we can answer some of those questions and work on other things that are flexible on your timeline.
Okay, sounds good. Just let me know when you guys think you have an answer. Happy to be flexible.
Awesome. Thanks so much for the big picture and for the questions.
All right, you're welcome.
Station Houston on 2 for Sophie. Just wanted to let you know that your PAO event can be in Columbus.
Houston from Sophie on 2. That's great news. Thank you very much. And I'm about to go to Columbus to try to do all the settings, and I will get changed after if it's okay for you.
Sounds good.
And from Sophie on 2, whenever you are, I am ready to do a comm check.
Checking, Sophie. Stand by.
Houston, Anil on 2, checking to see if I can start the regen activity early.
Anil, with you on 2, you are go for your regen tank activity.
Thank you. Houston, station on 2, the compressor port is connected on red, and the UPA fill drain valve is in process.
Copy, Anil, that's a good config.
Houston, station on 2 for water transfer.
With you on 2 for water transfer.
This is Sanjay, and I am ready for water transfer. I have a UNIVER number 1497, and this is empty.
Copy. 1497 is a good number, and copy empty. And we're expecting 26 minutes in 3.2, and you have a go in 3.3 when you get there.
Houston station on 2 for water transfer.
Go ahead on 2 for water transfer.
Houston, I am ready for water transfer and I am ready for step 3.
Copy. In 3.2, we're expecting 26 minutes and you are go in 3.3.
In 26 minutes, 3.3. Thank you.
Station Houston on 2, our guests are here for the event whenever you're ready.
Houston, this is the International Space Station on Space to Ground 2. We are here and we are ready to say hello.
Great, we're looking in the lab right now. Where are you guys at so we can pull up some video?
Sorry, we are hiding in the GEM right now. We've got GEM Cam 1 up.
We'll get that up. We'll let you know when we have that view up, and I'll hand over the phone shortly to our guest. All right, we have you up here. We can see you.
Hi, y'all. What's up?
Hey, Tucker, and all of your family. We are so excited to welcome you on board to the International Space Station.
Hey, come on.
Yeah, it's great to get a chance to talk to you.
Yeah, nice seeing you guys, too.
How are you doing today?
Pretty good. We're just out here enjoying mission control and just seeing NASA.
Very cool. We have a picture of you up there so we can see you and everyone and looking good. It's a good view upside down or right side up. And I heard you're really into astronomy, and we've got an astrophysicist here.
Yeah, I got to say, looking at the stars from up here, I feel super fortunate to have the opportunity to just stare out the windows up here. It's
I always grew up loving looking at the stars, but looking down at Earth is also pretty special from up here. It's just an incredible sight.
Yeah, I'll make one comment on the stars. I'm not as knowledgeable as this guy here, but I've been here just 1 week, and I found the only thing that I always recognize, which is the Big Dipper. And you can kind of see it set almost over the Earth, so it was a really cool view because I could connect with it and see it. I'm sure Chris could probably name a thousand of them there.
Also, heard that you love outdoors adventures, fishing, and all that outdoors activity, and we love it too, so it makes us feel good to talk about this.
As Sophie was saying, it sounds like you have a lot in common with all of us up here. We love to adventure and hike and explore the outdoors and explore space as well. And the other thing, if you're kind of catching a glimpse at what's going on up here, the thing that I love about being up here, it gives everybody this sense of playfulness, this levity that I think a lot of adults lose. And people find, once again, up here, as you can see, when you're throwing candy-coated chocolates to your friends and they're grabbing them with their mouth, or even just drinking water up here, look how much fun this is. You can make these big balls of water and just chase after them. That's a big one. He might choke on that one, so watch out. Well, he didn't choke, and he almost got it all, so that was a great demonstration.
Yeah, do you have any questions for us or anything you're curious about?
One main question, what is it like up there?
It's hard to describe exactly what it's like up here. There's you have the daily life that you're trying to get used to of operating in microgravity, where nothing stays where you put it, learning how to eat differently, learning how to go to the bathroom differently, learn how to move around, and then every day you get to float over to the window and look down at Earth, and it's a different, beautiful part of our home planet that we get to look at. And then every day we get to do some sort of science or something, trying to make a meaningful difference to everything back on Earth. So it's pretty surreal, pretty awesome experience up here. There's just so many pieces of it. It's quite amazing.
You also see that you're in very good hands down there with our increment lead flight director, the flight director on console today, our lovely Capcom Greer, and all the other console positions around. They are the super knowledgeable ones. Everything that we do up here, it's really the ultimate team sport. And you're looking at us up here, but looking around the room, how many more faces there are, and back rooms, and people in offices all over NASA are really the answer to how we're getting anything done up here. So hopefully you get some good time to chat with them as well.
I have another question. How cramped is it in there?
You know, surprisingly, it's actually kind of, I was surprised by how, you know, my crewmates aside, I was really surprised actually how spacious it is up here. I mean, you know, I think that, you know, they usually say that it's kind of hard to say exactly, but because we can kind of use all three dimensions of the space here, but I like to kind of say it's sort of like the size of a five-bedroom house up here. And, you know, a five-bedroom house for usually seven people is, you know, it's not super spacious, but it's not crowded by any sense. And you know, I'm not the tallest person in the world, and in some of our modules, like if you kind of sit in the middle of it, like you could actually struggle to hit the walls. Thankfully, you'll drift and eventually bump into them. You know, we do have some pretty tight spaces. We have a lot of stuff stored up here, so you know, sometimes going into finding a bag that's in our stowage compartment is sort of almost like I sort of liken it to like going caving, except imagine you were going caving, but in like a Chuck E. Cheese ball pit where there's balls all around you too. It's kind of like what finding things in some of our modules is like, or some of our cargo vehicles.
And I'll kind of add to that a little color, but my wife spent 5 days living in a dragon capsule, and I thought, well, that seems pretty cramped. But she told me it wasn't cramped because of the three dimensions. And I think I realized that coming up here, someone will be on a treadmill right in your way where you're trying to go by, but it'll be super easy to go by because you could just go over them or under them. And it's really strange. It doesn't seem like you should have that much maneuvering room, but the three dimensions almost adds you know, four times as much space to just one area.
And I got another question. How much G-forces do you guys experience when you guys take off?
Yeah, it's a good question. Chris and I rode up on a Soyuz, which is pretty similar to the Falcon Dragon, but we had somewhere between 3.5 to 4 Gs on the ascent up there. And that's kind of like the steep part of a roller coaster you're going down, and so that's a good way to think about it. But it's a pretty long onset, and it's all kind of unidimensional, so it's going right down your chest the whole time. It's something that isn't too hard to tolerate, but it is interesting when it comes on. You can really feel it, and I can hand it off to you guys if you want to talk about the Dragon experience.
Yeah, it feels not impossible to handle, but what was surprising for me is that it feels like there is an elephant sitting on your chest, just like, whoa! and then what was different from training, because we could train this in the centrifuge, so that was great, we were ready for that. But what was different from training was the vibration of the rockets, especially when it lifted off the pads, these very few seconds, I would say, when it lifted up, the vibration were just like, whoosh.
The other thing about the rocket launch that I thought was really interesting was when the rocket, so the G-forces kind of build up slowly. So like when you first take off, it actually doesn't, at least for me, it didn't feel like much. But then it kind of slowly builds up. But then the rocket has a stage separation where you go from having all this force to basically having like a lot less. And it almost made me feel like I was like hanging upside down for a second as the rocket started then accelerating again, which I thought was kind of really weird and interesting feeling.
Ryu, do you like roller coasters or those kind of rides?
Oh, a little bit. Minus the G-forces going down on the thing.
Yeah, I hear you. It's provocative sometimes. What's been your favorite thing you've seen on campus at Johnson Space Center today?
So far, from what I've seen, probably the control room. We haven't seen the rest of it yet, but yeah, the control room mainly.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Sometimes we get to work down there as well, next to Greer and the folks around you as Capcom, so it's a fun place to be.
Have you been on any fun adventures lately, Tucker? Camping or hiking or fishing? Any good trips?
Probably right now in Houston.
Awesome. Yeah, we like to live vicariously through you because we can't actually touch, you know, we have this most incredible view of all these beautiful places on Earth, but it's a little bit ironic because you can't experience it. You can't feel the breeze on your cheek. You can't smell any the smell of a forest. You can't experience the snow under your skis. You can just see it all and then just think about what it's like to experience it.
And there's definitely not enough Sour Patch Kids.
And I got, I think, one more question. What is the reentry like?
So reentry, I'm actually the only one up here that's experienced it so far because this is my second flight. So I did have a flight 6 years ago where I went up and came back down. The G-forces are actually pretty similar to a launch, but a little bit more. I landed last time in a Soyuz vehicle, and so I experienced, I think our peak was 4.2 Gs, but it doesn't last for too long. And it's a very dynamic ride going down because after your G-orbit burn, When you start entering the atmosphere, the capsule is literally burning up because of the drag and the friction of the atmosphere. So you're going through this plasma layer, and you can see through a window right next to your head that there's just this orange flame engulfing the vehicle. But luckily, we are very well protected by our heat shield. And for the Soyuz, you actually land on land. So kind of in the middle of nowhere in Kazakhstan, and you have these soft landing thrusters that fire just before you land to help slow you down a little bit. And it's what the Russians call a soft landing. A lot of astronauts describe it as kind of feeling like a minor car crash when you have this jolt from landing. You have parachutes that deploy much earlier than that to help slow you down considerably, and then those soft landing thrusters that I mentioned. For the Dragon, for Sophie and Jack and I, we'll be returning on the Dragon this time, so it'll be a little bit different. The G profile is pretty much the same, though not all that dissimilar. But this time, the big difference is we'll be splashing down in the ocean, in the Pacific Ocean, and we'll have the same thing where we'll have parachutes that will slow us down, and then we'll hit the water. And in both cases, you have rescue forces that that arrive on the scene very quickly in helicopters and or in boats in the water to bring us back to safety. So it's a pretty dynamic ride, especially when the parachutes are deploying. I remember that well in the Soyuz. I felt like I described it as being in a washing machine because you were moving in every direction. I couldn't even tell you which direction I was going, but that only lasted for about 20 seconds, and then it's a pretty smooth ride down. And then it's very wonderful to smell the earth again once the capsule door opens.
Well, I just want to thank y'all for letting me speak to you. It's been pretty awesome. I just want to say thank you from Earth. You guys are looking pretty good up there.
Hey, thank you so much. It was really, really a joy to talk to you. You know, getting to talk to folks like you really makes our days better and makes us happy. And so it's really just really the pleasure's ours. And I hope you really have an awesome rest of your day at JFC and in Houston.
Woo! Thank you, Trevor!
All right. Thank you guys for the event. It was a treat for us down here in Mission Control as well, and a pleasure to welcome Tucker and his family into Mission Control. So we'll resume ops and continue throughout the day. Thanks.
Houston Station on 2 for water transfer.
With you on 2 for water transfer, you are go in 6.1.
I go 6.1. Thank you. Houston Station on 2 for water transfer.
Go ahead on 2 for water transfer.
System, transfer force is disconnected from PWD and system rails, bypass rails, back to existing station.
Copy. Thanks, Andre.
Thank you.
Station Houston on 2 for any available crew member for PWD.
Station Huntsville, Space to Ground 2 for Chris and Mobilograph.
Chris, on 2.
Hey, Chris, we got, I think, a workaround for you for the Mobilograph downlink. It should be about 10 minutes of good time if you're ready to do that now or whenever's convenient. Just let me know.
Yeah, I might try to hop into my ARED now since I think we're back-to-back on that, but I can give you a call once I've finished my exercise and should have no problems knocking that out then if that works for you guys.
Yeah, we'll be here, Chris. Have a good lift.
Fantastic. Thank you very much.
And Station Houston on 2 for Chris, since you're hopefully still close to the mic. Just wanted to give you a heads up that PWD and XPWD are back online for your use.
Fantastic. Water is good. I will let everyone know. Appreciate it.
Huntsville Station on 2-0 for immunity assay kit gathering.
Getting with you on 2-0. Good afternoon.
Hey, how's it going? I'm doing the kit gathering, and I've got everything together in the MWA. One of the call-outs is for the EDTAS mount event. I've checked CTB 4113, and there are no EDTAS mount events, and they're wondering if they're spilled elsewhere.
Copy, NL. We're tracking them inside the 2.0 CTB, inside a Ziploc. And those monovets should have a pink head.
Okay, I'm going to get another set of eyes and see if I overlooked it.
Copy that, Anil. And while we have you near the mic, we're wondering if you could give us a status on the immunity essay, kit gather stowage note items, line 11, 12, and 13, as we spotted a discrepancy in the stowage note concerning the restore of the immunity essay kit bag 27 and its contents.
Okay, I'm ready to copy, and we did find the monovet stored in the mesh upper pocket. So I had overlooked that when you go inside the mesh upper pocket.
Wonderful. Well received. And concerning this discrepancy, these are stowage note line items 11, 12, 13, and 14, beg your pardon. And those items should be restowed in their original location in the 2.0 CTV for immunity assay and not the starboard MWA. How copy?
11, 12, and 13 restow in the original 4113 2.0 CTV. Copy.
That's a great readback.
Okay, I found the Ziploc bag, and it is quantity 2. CAD BSK-001 and it looks like 25, and there's two monofeds labeled 25. I'll put them into the kit 27.
Station Munich on Space to Ground 2 for anneal and immunity assay.
Space to Ground 2.
Hey, Neil. We just wanted to sync with you on these monovets. The EDTAS should not be found inside the immunity assay kit bag, but inside the 2.0 CTV. And two of them should be put inside the immunity assay kit bag number 28. Just wanted to sync with you on expectations.
Yeah, that's correct. I'm with you on that. Bag 28 will have two monovets. S-monovent, the individual number on it is 25, and 25 is on each of them. I'm putting that in there and closing bag serial number 28.
Copy, Anil. We think we're in a good posture. If you could provide a barcode for those tubes, that'd be appreciated, so we can sync on the items on our side.
Sure, I'll just call them down, if that's okay with you. It's 0289700 echo is one of them, and the other one is 0028971 echo. I have one follow-up question when you're ready.
Copy. We're checking. Station Munich on Space to Ground 2 for a new immunity assay.
Go ahead on 2.
Anil, we were just chatting here on the grounds on these barcodes that you provided. They appear to be old monovets that were loaded back in 2025, and they're no go for use. We think you need to have a look in another Ziploc bag uploaded on SpaceX 34. We're investigating alternative locations, specifics for you at this time. In the meantime, you mentioned you had a question, which we're ready for.
Yes, I route to two camera and take a look, but there was also a in there that looked like it had used scents and some blood in it, and I was curious, it kind of has a trash look, there's a lot of different pieces in there, and I'm curious what you'd like me to do with that. It was in free-floating in 4113, and it's on camera if you want to take a look.
Copy, Anil. We didn't quite catch the beginning of your comm. It was a little rattier.
No problem. Node 22 camera is got a close-in view of the thing that I have a question about, which is a bag full of empty monovets and blood. Quite other look like trash items, and I would like to know in 4113 where I found it, for just double checking.
We're checking, Anil. Station Munich on Space 2 Ground 2 for Anil and immunity assay.
Hey, Anil's with you on 2.
Hey, Anil. Thanks for your patience here. We just got the experts to review the video, and thanks a bunch for showing us that. We confirm this is a trash bag from a previous immunity assay session. So if you could label this bag as trash and keep it in the CTV where it was found, we'd appreciate that.
Okay, labeling and storing now.
Thank you, sir. Station Munich on 2 for Anil and forward plan with the immunity assay.
Anil is with you on 2.
Hey, Anil. So we're still working to find the alternative locations for those monovets, and we'll get words to you on that as soon as we can. In the meantime, you are go to proceed with the next activity for Columbus deck cleanup. And since we have good telemetry on the SUPs, you're also go with the cubic activities. I'll copy.
Columbus deck cleanup is complete, and I'll start on cubic now.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Houston, station on 2 for food consolidate.
With you on 2 for food consolidate.
Hello, Greer. So nice to talk to you and hear your voice back on the space to ground. I am in step 4.05 of Stow Track Food Consolidate Activity, and I'm looking for 4.0 CTB 5155, which is Food Samplers 3. I'm wondering if this is a typo, because I was able to find 5157, 5158, 5159, and 5153, and one of those, 5157, does have like an HTV number 3 on it, so I'm thinking maybe that might be the one I'm looking for.
Checking. Yeah, and we copy, Jessica. We're taking a look, and we'll get back to you.
Okay, copy. Thanks. Yeah, just for a little bit more info, I didn't see any food samplers on deck 3. The 5157 was moved to deck 4, I think, in the PMM reorg just yesterday. But 5157, 58, 59 are all in deck 4, and 5153 is in node 1.
Copy all. Thanks.
Station Munich on 2 for Anil and Immunity Assay.
Anil's with you on 2 for Immunity Assay.
Hey, Anil. We wanted to get back to you on the Monovet story. We've been chatting here with the different teams. We think those neuromonovets are in another Ziploc bag in the 2.0 CTV, so number 4113. If you don't mind taking another look, that'd be great. Otherwise, if no joy, the monovets you found earlier in the immunity assay kit, seal number 28, are workable according to the PIs here. You don't see impact to science there. Now copy.
Hello, I copy. I'm going to take the different monovet bags out, and I'll just put them on the MWA that's on node 2 to see if any of those work. There's a few of them. That might be the easy process. Otherwise, copy that the other ones will work.
Copy. And we're good with your proposal.
Nick, Anil on 2. I'm just going to prune out those different barcodes for you, and you can tell me which one to use. I think the camera idea won't work as well as I thought because the numbering is small.
Copy, Anil. We'll take the offer. Thank you.
Station Houston on 2 for Jessica for Food Consolidate.
Houston, Alec on 2.
With you on 2, Sophie.
I just wanted to report step 4.2. Additional cleaning will be needed for the helmet installed on EMU AST3003. And there is this, not a big amount, but some amount of residue from the glue of the sticky surface from the HAP extender.
We copy and we'll report to EDA.
Thank you. And by the way, I also turned on Node 1 camera. If you want to come on board, you're more than welcome to, but no worries, just as an offer.
Happy, thanks.
Munich, Sophie on 2 for a relaxed probe.
Munich with you on 2. Good evening, Sophie.
Good evening. Quick question for the smartwatch. I just got it, it's charged. But I see on the screen, update available, install now, estimated 1 minute, or install later. I had never seen that, so I was wondering if you had some words on this.
We're checking.
Thank you.
Sophie, Munich is back with you on 2. We were just chatting here about the smartwatch, and we asked you not to install, please.
Okay, so I click on install later, correct?
That's affirmative. And just to confirm, are you attempting to don the smartwatch now?
Yeah, and the message I read, oh shoot, the message disappeared. And I did not memorize it, but it said, basically it said that it said, I don't have the full message, but it said the software will be, the update will be installed later when you are not wearing the watch.
Copy that, Sophie. We'll investigate that further here. Thanks for the report. And Sophie, just a final...
And zoning time is now.
Copy, Sophie. And just to make sure that we caught your last, you're done in the watch at this time.
Actually, I'm starting the procedure to reset or to do whatever. I need to open the procedure now. I just got it from charging.
Houston, station on two for FGD dust filters.
With you on two?
Hey, the Cosmos dropped off some dust filters. I'm assuming these go into hardware trash, but just wanted to check in with you guys about it. They're FGB dust filters.
Happy, the FGB dust filters. We're checking.
Huntsville, Chris on two for BP download. I'm ready to do those steps whenever you guys have them for me.
Okay, Chris, Huntsville's with you. Got a couple steps here. So big picture, we're going to just have you manually encrypt the file and keep it on the laptop, and then we will go on board and pull that file down. So first thing I need to confirm is you're still using SSC 27.
That's the SSC that the data are on.
Okay, very good. Okay, very good. So I'm going to direct you to procedure 6.001, Mobilograph 13-hour alternate data download.
Okay, 6.001.
Okay, once you got that one, just steps 5.1 through 5.11 should do the trick. And once you're done with that, just let us know.
6.001, 5.1 through 5.11, and is there, I haven't looked at that yet, is there a place that it directs me to save the file to, or is there a place on that computer you'd like the file, just on the desktop or somewhere else?
Just the desktop should be fine.
Copy. On the desktop. Sounds good. I'll do that and let you guys know when I'm done or if I have any issues. Thank you.
Station Houston on two for Chris for filters.
Chris, two filters.
Yep, those are go for trash in a hardware JSP. Thanks for checking.
Copy all. I'll shove them in our current hardware JSP. And actually, one other question for you. I know we have a JSP shortage at the moment. These are maybe a tweener, whether these could easily just be, you know, sort of shoved in a bay in Cygnus or not. Is this something that needs to go in a hardware JSP, or could this be just put in Cygnus as is?
Yeah, Chris, thanks for giving us a heads up about the size. That's going to take us a longer answer, so we'll check and get back to you, but might not even be by the end of today.
Okay, I think they're small enough. I mean, they take up a fair bit of space in a JSP, but they're not egregious. So I'll just throw them in a JSP, and if we find that they can be taken out, we can do some dumpster diving and try to do that to conserve some space. Thank you.
I appreciate that. Thanks.
So Chris on two completed that encryption task. The file is on the desktop. It has the same file name as the original procedure specified with a .pgp extension, so not the the alternate one specified with FEXX, or, you know, Applied Engineer prefix. So it's just called mogdata.hms.pgp.
Okay, great news, Chris. Yeah, we'll come up and try to grab it. Hopefully that did the trick. And in case you haven't already, everything else can be stowed per your stone on your 1300 download activity.
Yep, already taken care of. Thank you. Huntsville, Chris on two. It does look like the whatever problem we had has resolved and that the iDrive Ops OCA down is now accessible again. So I can put the file in there if that's helpful for you guys.
Okay, thanks for the recommendation, Chris. I think it's maybe not fully up yet, so we'll stand down from using it. It's good enough for us now, and we're still trying to get everything back online.
Okay, copy. I'll leave everything as is. Thanks for the help.